Welcome to episode 33 of the Skip to the End podcast. As ever, I'm Ben.
I'm Adam.
And I'm Mark.
And we're a third of the way to the century.
Wow.
It's going quickly, isn't it?
Very.
It's impressive, really. I thought one of us would have killed each other by now.
Yeah, or I thought I might just give up because it's the most dedication I've ever given to anything in my life.
That is true.
Yeah.
That is true.
It's the longest relationship I've had with you two.
I'm going to think of something really special to do for episode 100.
Yeah.
We've got a while, but we should do something really special.
Let's do like a live episode from a boat or something.
Naked.
If we actually do that now, that'd be amazing.
Right. I'm sorting it. I'll get on it. So what are we... not naked. Forget that bit. We'll be wearing our Tommy pants, won't we?
Yeah. Always. Yeah.
So what have we got on the show today? We're going to be reviewing Steve Jobs, the film about... That's it. You guessed it. Steve Jobs. Telling the story of his time at Apple Computers. We're also going to be skipping back in time to 1997 and talking about our favourite films from that year. We're going to be re-watching The Empire Strikes Back, which I'm absolutely delighted about. And anyone who heard our response to that last week will know how delighted we are. And we're also going to be talking about the top three fight scenes in film history. So let's get started. Top three fight scenes in movie history then, chaps. The caveat that we put on this last time round was that it was to be fight scenes between one or two people or small groups, individuals, but not battle scenes. We didn't want orcs versus goblins and all that kind of garbage.
Just because you hate Lord of the Rings.
Just because I hate Lord of the Rings, correct. Although, you know, I'm going off on a tangent here. Speaking of orcs and goblins, have we all seen the trailer for Warcraft?
Yes.
Yeah. Looks pretty good, doesn't it?
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that.
And we will be reviewing that on a future podcast.
I'm sure.
But I digress. Mark, give us your first one.
It's from the 80s. Which,
what?
There's a surprise.
I'm going with Daniel LaRusso versus Johnny in The Karate Kid.
Lovely stuff.
So 1984 masterpiece, and it is a masterpiece. It taught me a lot about being a child and how you can easily learn from the elders in the world.
Yeah.
Mr. Miyagi.
Of course.
Shame he's gone. But no, Cobra Kai, and I'm talking about the final fight scene in the tournament where it becomes to
in which Daniel cheats to win.
It's superb, and we have the whole, you know, sweep the leg, which is classic. The build-up is very, very rocky. It's obviously the same composer, that's why. But when he actually goes down, has his leg badly injured, and I thought the tournament's over here. It's over. He's come so close, but yet so far.
Would have been a disappointing end to the film,
wouldn't it?
Wouldn't have worked.
But Miyagi does his whole... Hope you can hear that.
Yeah. Miyagi rubs him.
And it did the job. And he comes back and wins with that sort of crane kick.
Yeah.
And as a child watching that, though, did anyone try doing that the next day in the school? And you know,
big time.
Unbelievable fight. And everyone thought Daniel LaRusso was, I thought he was great. And just this kid that could suddenly paint a fence and wax a car. And then the next thing you know karate.
Yeah. Now, I believe, Mark, that last week you watched this film with our friend John Adams' brother.
Yeah.
Who is in his late 20s and had never seen Karate Kid.
No,
isn't that true?
Ever.
Shocking.
So that's probably what helped with this choice.
But, he's lived a very sheltered life.
Well, Adam, you grew up with him. What the bloody hell was he doing as a kid if he wasn't watching Karate Kid?
I wouldn't want to say on the podcast, but we found lots of tissues.
But yeah, I couldn't miss that film out, and I think it's superb. The adrenaline I get from rewatching it again even now is so good, and you are cheering for him, and I just love it.
Excellent.
It's been kind of tainted for me, though, ever since that video came out with the guy explaining that Daniel's actually the bad guy.
Yeah, I saw that. It's ridiculous. But
No, it's not. It's an illegal crane kick that he wins with. In a karate competition, you're not allowed to kick to the face.
Have you seen him now? He's about, I think he's 56, and it's really weird seeing him.
What's his name?
Ralph Macchio,
yeah.
He hasn't done much. No. Might get him on a future podcast.
He's not done much yet.
I was quite shocked when I saw him now and looked at his age and realised he was about 24 when he did Karate Kid.
Trying to be like an 18-year-old at college.
Yeah. Always happens, though, in Hollywood. They hire people who are much older. I think it's due to the child labour laws.
Yeah, because they can't work...
They can't work after midnight. They can only work X amount of hours a day. Like, I was watching True Grit the other day, and I was reading about Hailee Steinfeld afterwards, and she was 13. And every scene in that film where you see her from behind is a stunt double, because it just meant hours they spend not filming her from behind, they could spend filming her in front of her. It's just good logistics.
That's ridiculous.
Bloody child labour laws ruin everything.
Oh, no.
Shame. Adam, first pick.
Yeah, my first pick, I'm gonna go with V versus Mr. Creedy.
Nice.
And there, towards the end of V for Vendetta. Mm-hmm. It's probably because it has one of my favourite movie lines of all time in it, where you know what you have a
bullet. Don't tell them. Just tell them they can go back and listen to the episode where we discussed that.
And go back and listen to the episode on www.skiptothend.co.uk.
Nicely done.
But yeah, it's a great fight scene. It's an army of sort of, what, six or seven special soldiers, Mr. Creedy himself up against V. And they all unleash their guns into him, mm-hmm. but he's still standing. And then it's just the slow motion where he's throwing the knives at them. He's running around. He's just, before they even can reload, he's pretty much wiped them all out. And he's got Creedy by the throat. Yeah. It's not so much a fight as a massacre, I suppose. but it's such a cool scene. It's a very nice build-up as well. And for a scene that wasn't actually in the graphic novel, I thought they did a very good job kind of portraying V in a different light to how he was in the graphic novel, and mm-hmm. and this kind of summed that up for me.
It's a fantastic scene in a film full of them. Love that one.
V for Vendetta is slowly becoming like The Thing. It's that film that's getting
that we talk about
literally seven or eight categories now. I think it's ticked the box.
That's
for
true. Potential future rewatch
between that and The Thing.
It's a shame, obviously Bonfire Night's already gone.
Oh, that's true.
It would have been ideal.
Bugger.
Next year.
All right, I'll throw out my first one then. It's a biggie, and I wouldn't be surprised if Adam's got this in his list as well. It's the corridor scene from Old Boy.
Very, 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 very cool.
It's not in my list,
but
it's very. It was very close to making it.
And I'm probably sure you knew it would be in mine anyway. Yeah. And that's it. For anyone who hasn't seen the piece in Old Boy, the main character, he is going to this building. The place where he had been held captive, and he's going back there to try and get answers. And he goes into this corridor that must be, I don't know, 100 yards long, and it is just full, and when I say full, I mean wall-to-wall, floor-to-ceiling of bad guys. You know, your generic thugs and henchmen, and he just beats the living shit out of each and every one, but it's all done in one long tracking shot. You see, you're sort of looking from the side of the hallway, so it looks like a, you know, an alley. It looks like a side-scrolling platform. It looks like Double Dragon or something, mm-hmm. and it's just him beating the living frig out of, I don't know, two dozen bad guys using lengths of 2x4 and a hammer and his feet and his hands. And it's a brilliant fight, but it's also a bravura piece of filmmaking. The fact that it was done in this one long tracking shot, it's phenomenal to watch. If anyone hasn't seen Old Boy, go and see the film anyway. Even if you can't invest the 2 hours to watch the film, go on YouTube and look for the corridor fight scene, because it's mind-blowing.
It very, very close. It's probably my fourth choice. It was just ticking.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's like you say, it's not just the fight itself, but the way it's filmed. It's that tracking shot that just makes it. And it's just, you can't help. I wanted to stand up and applaud when I'd seen it, because it was just a directorial masterpiece.
Yeah. And it's one of those, there's a thing going around now of these supposed one take tracking shots that you get. There was one in Bond, the opening scene of the new Bond is supposed to be a one take, but it's obvious there were some, you know, cleverly hidden edits. The whole film
Birdman
was supposed to be one long shot, when of course there were just cleverly hidden edits. This wasn't that. This is one long shot that is, I don't know, 7-8 minutes long. And it's all well and good doing one long shot that's just people standing around talking. This was supremely choreographed brawling. You know,
it had to be perfect.
It had to be perfect. And I dread to think how many times, I need to look this up actually, how many times takes. It took them. Yeah. Because it couldn't have, if they did it on first take, congratulations all round, but I find it hard to believe, because it's just so delicately balanced in time.
No way that happened first.
No. I need to look that up. I'm going to look into that. But phenomenal. Mark, number two.
It's a film from the 80s.
Here we go.
What?
I have to use it. I'm sorry. They Live. Rowdy Roddy Piper versus Keith David.
It's in my list as well, dude.
5 minutes, 52 seconds of pure mayhem. Bring your sunglasses and just punch the shit out of each other. It is mind-blowing.
Yeah.
Like you were just talking about, really well choreographed brawling. This is the same for me. It's really well done. And it's, you have to give credit to them.
Yeah.
It looks so real. And they are literally knocking seven shades of shit out of each other.
Mm-hmm.
It is superb.
This is one of the reasons why, you know, some wrestlers can act, some can't. Luckily, Roddy Piper is one of those that could. But one of the reasons why it's so great to have wrestlers in fight or action films is that they are very good at staging choreographed fighting, because that's their day job. So this fight between Roddy and Keith David looked marvellous, because that's Roddy's stock in trade. Yeah. He knows how to make a fight look real. And the thing I love about that fight, as you say, it's five minutes, some odd seconds long, is that you watch it, and after about a minute, one throws a punch or lands a kick, and you think, oh, it's over. And then they get up again and start fighting. And you think, oh, right, they're done now. And then they start again. It just never wants to end, but it's brilliant.
It's incredible. I love the fact as well, when he's knocked out on the floor, he puts the sunglasses on him and he walks away and he gets up. It's literally like The Taker, and you're like, seriously, how long is this going to be? But it's entertaining. Yeah. You don't want it to end.
No.
Amazing fight.
Absolutely brilliant. No,
that's kind of it, though. It's like Ben says, after a minute, you think, oh, okay, that's done. And then it carries on for a bit, and you're like, okay, is this going to go on? How long is this going to go on for? But then after that sort of 2.5 minute, 3 minute mark passes, you don't want it to
end. No, exactly. Keep going. Yeah. I want another 10 minutes of this.
It's like one of those jokes. You know, a joke that's funny for a bit, but then people belabor it and it's unfunny, but then they keep going and it circles around to being funny again. That's what this fight is like. Genius.
That's what I hope we do on this podcast. We go off and we come back at the end. We're like, well, there you go. Made up for that hour of dribble.
Yeah, we're officially funny again.
What's your next choice?
I'm going to go with Ripley versus the Queen.
Good.
Wow. Very cool.
It's a very cool fight. Obviously, when she turns up in the suit,
mm-hmm.
it's just such a crescendo of a moment
mm-hmm.
for that film. Because obviously, we'd first been introduced to the Queen and the idea of the Queen. And she's pretty badass, let's be honest. And
then can I just point out you're referring to an alien creature, not Queen Elizabeth II?
Because
quite different.
It would have been probably better.
I don't know if I want to see a 70-year-old woman getting punched in the face.
But we've obviously... It's just two badass women, but one's an alien.
Mm-hmm.
Just knocking... But we're essentially trying to knock the shit out of each other. It's great.
That's feminism in action right there.
Ridley Scott.
That's what he's up to.
James Cameron.
I'm never going to argue when it's Alien. I adore that film.
Yeah.
Amazing choice.
Superb fight scene. Well, you've already had my second...
So my last one is, I'm thinking back of when I was a child and the films my dad used to make me watch, and this one sticks with me. So Enter the Dragon, Bruce Lee versus O'Hara, and it is just absolutely superb. It's not from the 80s, so I've knocked myself down, 1973.
Good Lord.
But my dad was really bloody massive on me watching Rocky films and Bruce Lee films, and this film, have you both seen Enter the Dragon?
I don't know that I ever have, actually, no.
It is brilliant for its time, and it is iconic, and he was very big on Bruce Lee and nunchucks and stuff, and I used to watch it, and this fight basically is just brutal. Mm-hmm. Bruce Lee's the underdog, and he just beats the shit out of this guy, and it ends with him lying on the floor, and Bruce Lee is ready to walk away and say, leave it now, I don't want to kill you, leave it. And he stands up, gets bottles, smashes him, is like, goes for him. So he kicks him again. He falls to the floor. He jumps in midair and lands on him. You don't see him actually land on him. You just see Bruce Lee's face as he's landed on him mm-hmm. and then his reaction. And I think that's more powerful than actually seeing what would have happened to this bloke that he had landed on. Yeah. And his face is... Watch it on YouTube, guys, because it's superb. And it's one of those fights that, because I was probably about 8 when I watched this... It's just stuck with me forever. Mm-hmm. And I think it's so, so iconic. For me, it beats Bruce Lee versus...
Chuck Norris.
Chuck Norris in Enter the Dragon. But no, he does. And it's please, guys, on YouTube later, check this out. It's so, so good. And
absolutely.
It worries me that my dad made me used to watch films like this as a child.
Yeah. It explains a lot.
He was very big on this, but it's beautiful.
My third choice, and it's probably, I'm not sure if it's going to be a popular one, an unpopular one, I don't know. Obi-Wan versus Darth Vader.
Very, very cool.
Awesome.
Just not for the fight itself, but the tension behind it. Mm-hmm. Like, just the conversation they're having as it's kind of going on.
Yeah.
It's not the most agile fight. None of the ones in the original trilogy are.
No.
But it's all about the tension. It's all about how we kind of get into splice with these different things that are going on the Death Star at the same mm-hmm. time. But the crux of the fight itself... It's just, I mean, it's a masterclass from Alec Guinness. And nothing apart there, McGuinness. I think of Paddy McGuinness. That would have been different, wouldn't
Christ.
It?
Christ. Bolton Obi-Wan. if you strike me down, I'll become more powerful than you could ever imagine.
So Alec Guinness and obviously James Earl Jones writing the voice for Darth Vader. It's just... There is just something about it where you can literally feel it when you're watching it. You can feel how much tension there is between the two characters.
Mm.
And that's something that's been completely missing from the other Star Wars since.
Well, yeah, the prequels, absolutely, yeah. Yeah, great choice. Can't disagree with that one.
All great. Yeah. Ruin it now.
Yeah. Well, I'm not going to ruin it, but I'm going to say one that I don't know that you've both seen. Did you say that you watched Eastern Promises recently, Mark?
I did.
You did. Have you seen Eastern Promises yet?
You've not.
You'll know the scene I'm talking about, Mark. The sauna scene. So Viggo Mortensen's character is a Russian mafia enforcer, and he is, you know, balls naked in a sauna, and then two hired thugs come in to do him over with shivs, and he gets into this brawl where he manages to beat the living fuck out of these two fellas whilst entirely bollock naked, and isn't it one of the most brutal things you've ever seen, Mark? Isn't
absolutely
it like
absolutely horrendously brutal?
Because it doesn't look staged. It's not one of those where, you know, you throw a punch and you hear a sort of thwack noise. You know, it's not like that. It's two or three dudes rolling around on the floor, brawling, laying into each other with punches, stabbing each other with shivs. It feels real. And the fact that Viggo Mortensen has got his cock out the whole time just adds to it in some way. But it's brutal, and it's a brilliant scene. Again, you know, if you haven't seen the film, at least go and find that on YouTube. In fact, I don't know, might not
you
be on YouTube.
Because
of the heavy cock content, it might not be on YouTube, but watch
are
that
there,
film.
Are there any places they would be able to find that? Any video streaming websites?
Maybe Pornhub, I don't know. but watch the film anyway, Adam, because it's, again, one of my favourite films.
You've spoken about it a couple of times, actually, over the course of the podcast, so it is something that I do want to watch.
Yes. Not
that See, scene I always
that,
do
just
this.
That bit.
I always take us away. You always say these things, and I actually go ahead and do this. But yeah.
Wouldn't
it's
say
brilliant.
Always, sometimes.
Most of the time. But it's just a brilliant, brilliant film. And
it is.
So gritty.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Do you want to hear what the guys on social media said?
Yeesh.
Good old designer for us, Paul Dawson. Ash versus his own hand in Evil Dead 2.
Brilliant.
That is such a classic. Wayne Saunders, Edward Norton versus Jared Leto in Fight Club.
Especially good because it meant Jared Leto's face got smashed in, which I'm always happy with.
On Twitter, DJ Valentine, the whole kitchen fight in The Raid 2.
I've not seen The Raid 2 yet.
So the whole film could be used for that. Steve Toogood has had three choices. Luke versus Vader, the fight scene in Gladiator, and the fight scene from Anchorman.
Oh, the brawl between the news teams.
Jane Douglas Jones has put anything from The Raid. Mm-hmm. So yeah, you can't argue. Jesse Lauren has put Stiller versus Puffy in Something About Mary. Peg and Frost versus the Garden Zombies in Shaun the Dead.
Yeah.
And Franco and Rogan and McBride in Pineapple Express, which is superb.
Oh, yeah, that's when they're in the living room.
Yeah,
right? Because don't they end up shooting Danny McBride?
Yeah,
he's there just
horrendous.
Bleeding out, apologising. Yeah.
Cole of House Kenobi agrees on Pineapple Express, but would be closely followed by Gross Point Blank.
That is a great film.
Absolutely brilliant.
Brilliant, underrated film, that Gross Point Blank.
Sarah _ Buttery, Neo versus Agent in The Matrix.
Yeah, first one.
And she's actually said she's never seen the other Matrix films, so good on you.
Good for
her. Don't bother.
Yeah.
Cap versus Winter in Captain America 2.
Yeah.
Great one. And again, Vader versus Luke. Couple more. We asked Popcorn Heart, big special guest. Johnny versus Mark, keep your options in your pocket from The Room.
Of course. Standard. Good work, Gemma.
Scott versus Gideon in Scott Pilgrim.
Yeah.
And Hit Girl versus everyone in Kick-Ass.
Yeah, definitely.
And very finally, this one made me chuckle. Lee Teasdale, Borat versus, is it Azamat?
Oh, you know, his manager. He's naked, isn't
naked.
He? Because he is cock
and
balls.
And his balls are on his head. And they're like sort of 69ing on the bed. Yeah. It's absolutely foul.
Azamat Bagatov.
So good. So some really good ones there.
Yeah.
Yeah, brilliant.
Proper made me chuckle reading them. I believe it's my turn for next time's topic.
It is.
I've had this topic on the back burner for probably around 2 months. And all I've been trying to do is beat myself up of, do we have 3 or 5 choices? And I'm going to be really, really anal and make it 3.
Good.
For the next topic, I want us to pick our top 3 all-time movie characters.
Ooh. Ooh. I see why you were tempted by 5 then.
That is bloody hard. Yeah, yeah. I see Empire Magazine. I see IMDb. It's now time for us 3 to pick our top 3, and it's not going to be easy.
Shit. And that's not just like top 3 heroes
or
villains. It's top 3
characters of all time.
Holy shit, that's going to take some thought.
It could have been the top 10.
Yeah.
So, next time, top 3 movie characters.
We've been to our local View Cinema to see Steve Jobs, the film about the seminal computing genius, or more creative genius he was rather than the computing side. He was the mastermind behind Apple, of course. This is a film about his life. It was written by Oscar-winning writer Aaron Sorkin, directed by I believe Oscar-winning director Danny Boyle as well. He's certainly been Oscar-nominated. It stars Michael Fassbender in the lead role, a variety of other actors in it, including...
Kate Winslet, Seth Rogen.
Yeah. It's a really good cast. The key with this is rather than being your standard biopic that follows someone through their whole life, this is a three-act play, effectively. It is like a play. There are kind of three 30-minute sections, each one focusing on a different product launch. Mm-hmm. So the first one is the 1984 launch of the Macintosh. Then it's the 1988 launch of Jobs' next computer, which was apart from Apple. It's when he'd left. And then the third one, I believe, was the 1998 launch of the iMac. It's an odd structure, and I want to throw this out to you, Adam, first. What did you think to that in terms of a structure? The fact that they didn't choose to go down the standard biopic life from birth to death route, they went with this three-act structure thing.
The most interesting thing that stood out for me was the fact that it didn't feel like 2 hours.
Mm-hmm.
When I was sat there watching it, each individual segment ended, but each individual segment felt 20 minutes long.
Yeah.
But evidently that wasn't the case, because before I knew it, the film was done.
Yeah.
So the fact that I'd been there for 2 hours, I was very surprised with. I don't think it's bad,
mm-hmm.
but I think there are better ways to do it as well.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah.
But I it was something different, and I'm never going to complain about it as someone doing something completely different, like something different in cinema.
Mm-hmm.
I think if I'd sat there and had a biopic from Steve Jobs' birth to through his life to his death, I'd have been bored out of my school. Mm.
And there are a couple of those out there, both of which I've watched this past weekend, and I'll talk about those later. Mark, same question to you then. What did you think about that structure? Do you think it told us enough about the man, seeing as it basically occurred on 3 days? It only told 3 days of his life, effectively.
It's a really good question, and I think it worked for me. I think I was kind of indulged in each section, and it didn't get, like Adam said, it didn't get too long. So before I was probably getting a bit itchy, and like it was like act two's now up, and it was never too long that I was lost interest. So I think for me and my short attention span, it really worked. It gave me 20 minutes of a really good performance of that bite of his life. Then you get the new chapter, and I was like, oh, this is really good. I'm indulged. And then, oh, and now it's the final one. And I think I said to you on the way home, I looked at my watch and I was really hoping, so I hadn't done much research into this, that we were going to get the iPhone or the iPod or something else at the end.
Yeah.
And I know we will talk about it later, but it ended with just about to mention his idea for the iPod. And I expected there to be that whole big, I've changed the music industry and everything. Yeah. And it was quite nice to kind of, like you said, wow, time's up, 2 hours is done. And I feel like I've really got to know that guy.
Mm.
Just to pick up on something you said a minute ago about, did we see enough about the man?
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't just on each day, because there was also sort of flashbacks.
There's not many, though.
Into kind of other actions he had taken throughout his life as well. So it wasn't just on those sort of 3 days, but I kind of get your point there.
I was worried going into it because of this three-act structure, the fact that it took place over 3 days. I thought, this man has had such an influence on computing and on design and on culture that how can you do his story justice basing it on three events in his life rather than the whole life? I shouldn't have been worried. I forgot that this was Aaron Sorkin, who is one of the very best writers in the game. And I thought this film was brilliant. I thought the structure of it, the way they did those three things, each individual section of the three sections told you something about the man, enough about him at that stage of his life, that once you'd seen all three, you knew who he was. You got him without having to sit through endless scenes of him and Steve Wozniak in the garage building their first computer, and then scenes of him and his missus at their house. You didn't need to see those things because you got enough of that. You know, the first section here is relatively early days at Apple when he's full of bravado and he basically, you know, puts out a product that bombs, and that leads to him getting sacked. The next act is him where he started his own company just to wind up Apple, and he's being sued, and he's just sticking the V's up at them, basically, to get them to buy him out, at which they did. The third one is his triumphant return, so he's a different place in his life. And then you've got the fact that you've got his relationship with his daughter that you see at those three different stages across her life, like, you know, over a 15-year span. I thought it was amazing, actually. I thought it worked brilliantly. I was really, really worried about it, and I thought it was fantastic.
I think one of the things to pick up on there is the fact that it's like you say, it tells you enough about the man at that point in his life.
Mm-hmm.
And over the course of the three acts, we see how much he changed, yet how much he didn't change.
Yeah.
Which is a very interesting, it's a masterpiece thing to do, really. If you can write something that shows you how someone shifts from one point to another,
yeah,
that's great. But if you can actually make people realize, because he was real, this man was a real person. So they've actually shown us in depth how he, how his relationship shifted with people and shifted back constantly.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't a case of, oh, you know, everything's all right in the end with him and what Steve Wozniak. Everything's great. Everything's fine. Because that, well, that's not the case.
No.
Like, they had a mutual respect for each other, but they were bubbling under the surface. There was just this, not hatred, but just dislike.
Mm.
And same with Andy.
Andy Hertzfeld.
Andy Hertzfeld, yeah. The same, that scene with those two in Act 3, where he says, it's a good job I didn't like, well, does it matter? It's a good job it doesn't matter because I don't like you.
Yeah.
And he says, that's funny, I've always liked you.
Yeah. Yeah, it was very much a case of, it's the whole evolution, not revolution thing, where they made it obvious that over this span of time he had changed, but you can't change your spots entirely. He was still Jobs at the end of the day, who was, for all that he was a creative genius, he was a dick at times, and no one will dispute that. Even he admitted that, you know.
Yeah, he was notoriously difficult to work for,
mm-hmm.
but look at the results.
Yeah, exactly.
I think the... I'm a big fan of Sorkin and like The Newsroom, and I think... you're not going to get maybe that you'll get a few, but there won't be many films with dialogue and the writing up to this standard this year.
Mm-hmm.
And it's scary that if you actually talk about what happened in the film, it's all dialogue. There's no special effects or it's literally his launches, his crowds of rooms and crowds of people gathering to hear his speech and his thoughts and what goes into it and behind the scenes. And the writing is captivating, and it really is. If you actually say to me, there's 20 minutes of him talking to Seth Rogen's character in an auditorium where there's other people trying to set up, I could not look away from the screen for those 20 minutes. And it wasn't the stoner dude, Seth Rogen. It was the character himself.
Yeah, he was, wasn't he?
And I was there absolutely mesmerized. And to be fair, Fassbender is sensational in this.
This is the other thing, though, is it's like the writing is fantastic, but the material, the people you're giving this material to as well are sublime.
And
Jeff Daniels.
Jeff Daniels are great. And notoriously, not everyone is good with Sorkin's dialogue because he writes in such a verbose way. You know, he doesn't write in sentences, he writes in paragraphs. And some people just can't deliver his dialogue, they're not attuned to it. So it's about getting the right actors who fit it, and this did it gangbusters. Like getting Jeff Daniels from The Newsroom, someone he knew could speak his dialogue, was a great plan. But yeah, Rogan did it brilliantly, Fassbender did it brilliantly. And the thing about Fassbender, he doesn't look anything like Jobs.
No.
He doesn't sound like Jobs, he doesn't walk like Jobs. I watched the film Jobs this past weekend, starring Ashton Kutcher. Not a great film, distinctly average. Not a bad film, distinctly average. But at least Kutcher looks like Jobs and sounds like him and walks like him. He has this sort of stooped walk. So when you're watching the film, you know, look just purely with your eyes, you're like, yeah, wow, that's a great representation. You watch the rest of the film and you realise Ashton Kutcher's a fucking shit actor and it wasn't worth the time. But at least, you know, they tried to go from that angle. Whereas this time with Fassbender, they've gone bollocks to getting someone who looks or sounds like him. It's about embodying who he was, not what he looked like and sounded like. And Fassbender is amazing. Absolutely brilliant. Mesmerising.
I think he grew to look more like him. Like the last act, he did look quite a bit like Jobs when he was dressed up. He had the glasses.
Yeah.
But
I think that's more because that's the iconic visual. Iconic look that's of, what of we Steve know. Jobs. When you think
the
of Steve Jobs, you think
the,
of a black turtleneck, blue jeans, white shoes, grey hair, little round glasses. Mm. And because he was wearing that look, that which Jobs wore all of his last sort of 10 launches, that's why I think he seemed right.
And we're not really mentioning the female actress here.
Kate Winslet.
Superb. And her accent was phenomenal.
I take umbrage with that. The three acts, I agree. Acts 2 and 3, because she's meant to be a Polish-born American, so she has a Polish inflection in her voice. Acts 2 and 3, she was obviously Polish. First act, I thought she was American. It wasn't as strong.
It stuck with me from the end of the film, I remember.
It wasn't until the little girl said to her, I like your accent, you're Polish, aren't you? And she was like, yeah. I was like, oh, okay, she's supposed to be doing an accent. And then it was much more pronounced after that in the other two acts.
Yeah, I think I'm remembering more towards the end. Mm. But even the little girl was superb.
Yeah, she was a good actress.
Really, really good. I've not seen her in anything before. No. But it's just nice we enjoyed a film. And it's a real weird one to talk about because it's not about the cinematography or special effects or
strangely enough, some of the scenes in this are more memorable than some of the scenes we've seen in films recently.
Yeah.
Like that conversation between Jobs and the ex-CEO, played by Jeff Daniels, in that empty corridor, which is interspliced with the board votes and how Jobs was trying to push him out, is one of the most fantastically delivered conversations I've seen for a long time.
Yeah, absolutely.
And as Mark mentioned, the auditorium with Wozniak and Jobs.
Yeah.
So tense.
Brilliant scene. And as you say, it's a fairly static thing. It's not got like big special effects, but because Boyle is such a great director and has a good eye for visual flair, there are a few things that he threw in that I really liked. For example, there's a scene between Jobs and Joanna, Kate Winslet's character, where they're in a hallway and Jobs is talking about the Skylab launch in context of his new product. And they show on the wall behind them, which is just a plain white wall in a corridor, Boyle then decided to show footage of the Skylab launch on the wall behind them, which obviously didn't really
to
happen.
To emphasise the point.
And it was just a bit of directorial flair that he threw in, and it worked. And they were the little things that stopped the film being entirely static. Otherwise, it was just a film set in three auditoriums.
He even made the auditorium look bloody good. The panning and kind of showing the actual scale of how many people go insane, the people like banging their feet to build up the hype that he's about to come on stage.
Yeah.
I was on the edge of my seat. It felt like I was watching a bloody American football game full of a stadium, you know, waiting for this. It was bloody good.
Yeah, it was very, very good.
And I think they captured the essence of Jobs very well.
Yeah.
Throughout this entire thing. Like you said, the dialogue, the mannerisms, everything about him seemed to be spot on.
Yeah. Sorry, I was just going to say, that's exactly what it's about. You've nailed it there, capturing the essence. Whereas the Jobs film with Kutcher, they wanted to tell his whole life and make it look like him.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas Sorkin and Boyle went, forget that. We don't need to tell his whole life story. We don't need to find someone who looks like him. We just need to capture his essence.
In
and
two
they did
hours,
that perfectly.
You have to give a measure of the man.
Yeah.
And that's what they did.
Yeah, they did.
I'm happy.
Let's talk about Rogan briefly. You know, as you said, Mark, he's known as this stoner guy.
He's a man who has impressed me more and more recently.
I think he's far more versatile than people give him credit for, and I think he's one of them that the more dramatic roles he does, the more people will like him.
Mm.
He's very believable. He doesn't seem like he's acting, which I know it might be because a lot of his previous roles he's basically just being him, a fat stoner. But even in this, where he was, you know, trying to come out of his mold a little bit, it felt real.
Yeah.
I've never met Steve Wozniak. I've never even seen him interviewed. I don't really know what he's like. But I believed that Rogan was Wozniak.
No, good on him. You know, you stick someone like Stifler in a wig and ask him to do a serious role, what are you going to think? You couldn't take him seriously. And I was worried about Seth Rogen when he did a lot of comedies after another, you know, Knocked Up and Superbad and then Kevin Smith's film. And he did a lot.
Yeah.
And he literally was getting to the point where I was like, I'm not going to be able to take you seriously. And Jonas Hill did the same thing. He went into a serious role in Wolf of Wall Street and I took him seriously. Mm. And I was like, you know, you're getting a lot more respect from me. I really hope now he carries on and gets, you know, to work with someone like... Give him a real decent director who's going to get a good performance. I'm thinking straight away something like working with Leonardo DiCaprio in a film and, you know, getting a really good serious role where he can really prove himself. Because this was, for me, his finest performance. And like you said, I didn't think of him as that stoner.
He's starting to prove himself already. I mean, the conversation that him and Fassbender, as Jobs and Wozniak, have in the orchestra pit is so amazing when Jobs is saying, did they make you come out and slate me in the press? And then he's like, it's okay, you've always got to pass. And he's like, how patronising are you? And it was just so amazing.
Yeah, you saw that him go from being the jovial Wozniak to the angered, annoyed at how patronised he'd be. Yeah, it's a great, great scene from him and an overall good performance.
Every single person was fantastic in this film. Yeah. And I'm hoping, because I know it hasn't opened up doing very well, because it is quite a niche film. Do you want to go and watch a film about someone that's dead that invented the iPod and stuff? That's what a lot of kids in this say. No, I don't. I want to go and see Spectre or what else is out.
Yeah.
But just for the performances alone, go and see them. But for me, Fassbender, this is one of the performances of the year.
Yeah.
Absolutely incredible.
And you've talked about Danny Boyle's direction already with the Skylab projected onto the kind of wall.
Mm-hmm.
The bits between acts when they intersplice the year and how that montage they put together of kind of everything that happened in that time, how Apple's stock plummeted and... Obviously, they brought up the, what was it called? Like the Nexus or something? What was it called? The Palm Pilot.
The Palm Pilot thing. I know what you mean, yeah.
Yeah, they show the Simpsons obviously referencing that. It was like Beat Up Martha. It says Eat Up Martha. And how poor that and dreadful that whole idea was.
Yeah.
I thought they did a really good job in showing the passage of time.
Yeah, they did because they have like news clips and that sort of stuff. And that worked really, really well.
And one of the things that impressed me about the last time they did it was how the screen kind of closed in as the year finished, as it kind of finished up going from 1988 to 1999?
Something like that, So many years, but it's really, really well done.
Just, like you said, he's got this visual flair. He just knows how to get the most out of what he's doing, Danny Boyle.
But I always think he does it quite subtly. Yeah. He's never like in your face. Yeah, look what
not,
I can
it's
do.
Not flashy.
Like you
never
just said
flashy.
About that scene where in the hallway they're projecting it. I only just remembered it now. You've mentioned it, but it was that good. I didn't. It's just really well done.
Unless someone points it out, or you're looking out for it in his films, you barely notice.
Exactly.
It.
There's another bit where Jobs and his former boss, the Jeff Daniels character, they're talking about a Bob Dylan song, talking about Bob Dylan lyrics, and then some of the lyrics are then all of a sudden just sort of flashed up on the floor that they're standing on. And again, it's just subtle in the background,
or on
the wall, and it doesn't dominate the view. It's just there and subtly done.
It's one of those films that you know that if you go back and watch it, you'll spot even more, which I'll probably do.
Yeah. Big time.
I've seen a lot of Jeff Daniels recently.
Well, thankfully, he's in a good role this time. Not Dumb and Dumber 2 again.
But he's in obviously The Martian as well.
That's true.
He's getting about a bit.
Yeah.
I'm really impressed with him. I've never watched The Newsroom.
So, yeah, it's hit and miss. He's great in it, but we're not getting into that. We'll save that for our TV podcast that we'll be launching next week. Not really.
Disclaimer, we will not be launching a TV podcast.
That is not a verbal contract. Let's score the bastard. Adam.
So I was very apprehensive about going to see this film, not only because I think my bias against Apple kind of went in for that. You guys know how much I dislike Apple. Yeah. I dislike the end-to-end, as they call it.
Yeah, closed. You can't add anything to it. Yeah,
the whole Apple products only works with Apple products. It just annoyed me.
He had an Apple phone last year.
And it broke.
And his TV's made by LG, which is the same company.
No, I'm joking.
TV's not made by LG. But I digress anyway. I was afraid my bias is going to get in the way, so I sat down to watch this film. I was not excited at all. And I think that's kind of helped in my opinion of it. I think the fact that I wasn't looking forward to it has helped me enjoy it a lot more. So as we've already mentioned, for Fassbender's performance, everyone's performance, Sorkin's dialogue, Danny Boyle's directing, 8.
Mark?
I'm just going to go 7, just because I always overrate things, then look back a few weeks later on the website and think, God, I scored that high like I did with, I forgot what it was.
Mac and Me?
No, that, I've underrated that. That's a 10. But,
The Room's favourite film?
No, Birdman, I gave a 9, but on this, ridiculous. It's a 7 for me.
I'm going with Adam. I thought it was an 8. For me, it's a high 8. I was even close to giving it a 9. I thought it was a masterclass in everything, in writing, acting, direction. I thought it was fabulous. I'm hoping the poor box office won't affect its Oscar chances.
I was about to say, just while we wrap up, the release strategy, obviously Danny Boyle's criticised it. What do you think?
Well, they released it in the States initially. It went out to the art cinemas for about a week or two, and then they released it wide to over 2,000 screens. And it was Danny Boyle's argument is that they released it wide too soon. They wanted word of mouth to build. I personally think it should never have gone wide. Not to 2,000 screens, 2,000 odd screens is what you put Captain America 2 in. It's not what you put what is basically a stage play. It's pretty much like a play, a play on film about a dead inventor. As popular as Apple products are, this is not a blockbuster movie. I think this should have just been an art house independent film anyway. Because when it was just in those few cinemas before it went wide, it was getting some of the highest per cinema grosses of any film ever. And then when it went wide, it was getting the lowest because that was the wrong audience. But I'm just hoping that that isn't a negative against it, because I want to see Fassbender in the running for Best Actor. I want to see Sorkin especially in the running for Best Screenplay, and possibly even Boyle for Director as well. You know, I think it needs to be recognised.
It's an 8 then, isn't it?
Yeah, all over. 8 out of 10.
On the last episode, we didn't give anything away. Sure. We're getting into a routine of just giving loads and loads of amazing prizes.
Yeah, it was nice to have a break, wasn't it?
It was, and I hope people will realise that you can't have stuff every week. But I did promise the listeners that we were going to come back with something bloody good. I said, watch this space.
What did you say? Did you say watch this space?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So
I watched this space.
Yep, that's good. In conjunction with the release of Steve Jobs, the movie, our very beautiful friends at Universal.
And they are beautiful.
Great bunch of lads.
Given us an Apple Watch.
Holy moly.
I'm not joking.
Moly.
It doesn't beat the Tommy Pants, but
an Apple with a clock
on it. The super gadget, basically like an iPhone on your watch. It's unbelievable. It's our biggest prize we've ever given away.
You're joking.
I'm not joking. No, it's. I did say I'll come back with something special.
Yeah.
How have you got this?
Any chance I can Universal hook us up with an extra three?
That would be superb. But no, it goes in very nicely following the review of Steve Jobs. So mm-hmm. I think to give this away, all you need to do is let us know the date of birth of Steve Jobs.
Oh, nice one.
A little bit harder than your normal one, but you can still Google
yeah,
it.
Yeah, putting the name Steve Jobs into Google is that difficult.
Whoa, don't tell them how to
Sorry, I'm giving the game away.
And the way you can let us know and enter this competition is go on our Facebook and post it on our wall. You can tweet us at STTE Podcast, or you can drop us an email, which is podcast@skiptotheend.co.uk.
Yeah, or go on to skiptotheend.co.uk, the website, and all our various links are on there.
Whatever you want to do. Whatever as long as you let us know. We will announce it on the next episode, and I'll tell you what, yeah. That is a bloody good prize.
This is going to be our most popular competition yet. I guarantee it.
I'm going to enter.
Until we give a Skip to the End t-shirt away.
Not allowed.
Yeah, what? Once we give a Skip to the End t-shirt away, this is going to be the biggest thing ever.
I'm fairly sure I could sue us for not allowing me into this competition. It's got to be a violation of human rights or something.
The way that these prizes are going, how Universal keep upping the game, they're going to be giving like a Bugatti Veyron away.
Yeah, I hope that we get to the point where we're like, on the next episode, we're giving a trip to Universal Studios. All the events, that would be awesome.
Unreal.
But yeah, we're going to announce the winner in 2 weeks' time, and good luck to everyone.
My favourite time of the show.
Mm-hmm.
It's Skip Back in Time. For those of you who don't know what Skip Back in Time is, our newer listeners, first of all, where have you been? I mean, come on, we've been doing this for a while now.
You've got some catching up to do.
Johnny yeah. Come Latelys.
Yeah. Well, it's basically where we've got a year from cinematic history and we choose our favourite films. We've actually been working backwards from 2015. Mm-hmm. So we're currently on 1997. It's a good year. I've actually wrote down what I think each of yours is going to be.
Okay.
So I'm interested to see if I got it right.
Right, okay, let's do this then. You throw out what you think Mark's is now. Say it now, and we'll see if it is.
Chasing Amy.
Yeah, so that's the same. That's where I think his Mark's going to be.
Of course it is.
Yeah.
Of course it's Chasing Amy. Now, we give a lot of abuse, especially Ben, to Kevin Smith.
Mm-hmm.
But I will go on here now and say that this film, and I've said it since the day you've met me, is a masterpiece, and
shame.
It is.
Shame.
And the best part is, Ben hasn't seen it, so he can't argue too much.
Yeah.
But it is.
I believe during the Kevin Smith count we did not too long ago, the Clerks 2 episode, you allowed him Chasing Amy in the good pile?
We did. For those who didn't hear that episode, again, where were you? We went through every Kevin Smith film. I wouldn't say Kevin James film then. Shouldn't have to. Sorry, I mean President Paul Blart Mall Cop. We went through every Kevin Smith film and worked out which ones go in the good column, which ones go in the bad. And was it 8-2 in favour of bad?
8-3, maybe.
8-3, was it? But one of the good ones, I did concede that Chasing Amy is known to be a good film.
It's, although it is 9-3, because Yoga Hoses is due to come out soon.
Oh, dear.
But no, Chasing Amy, for me, is easily in my top 10 films of all time. Mm-hmm. It's by far Kevin Smith's finest piece of work. It tops Dogma for me. The acting in it is sensational. The directing is sensational. And one day, Ben, I'm going to pick it as a rewatch because it's the one film I think you might say, hands up, like you did with Dogma.
Yeah.
It's a bloody good film.
Pretty sure I've not yet used my veto. That might not be the week.
You've got one. But it's... A lot of people say it's his finest piece of work, and it's such a shame that it's gone downhill, because mm-hmm. when I look at Tusk and stuff, I don't know how you made this and then that, but it's superb, and I just want people to go out there, if you haven't seen it, and watch it, because the story itself is mind-blowing, the soundtrack's brilliant, and it's just a really bloody well-made film. And it's probably before he started smoking lots of weed and coming up with stupid suggestions like making a Moose Jaws, which is his next one, and it's just bollocks, but... Just go and watch it. It's amazing.
See, I can't comment on it because I haven't seen the film. But as I say, I know it to be apparently a good film. And I will put this out there. I do talk a lot of smack about Kevin Smith because I've seen his films. You know, it's based on something. But I like the guy. Honestly, when I see him interviewed and stuff, he seems like a really cool, chill dude. I would love to go and hang out with him and just have a few drinks. And I think he'd be great fun on a night out.
Especially comic books, man.
Yeah, exactly. He seems like a great dude. I have nothing against him. I just think a lot of his work is shite, especially recent work where he's allowed to do whatever he wants with no checks and balances, no control. That's my issue with Kevin Smith, not the person.
Cool.
Cheers, man.
Mark doesn't want to say anything to that.
No, I'm just happy to hear it.
I like Chasing Amy. I think it's a good film.
So what did you think Ben chose?
Spawn.
Incorrect. Ooh. It was in the conversation, but I didn't pick it. I went with a film. Oh, go on, Mark. Do you think you know what it is?
Gross Point Blank.
No, it's not. No. It's Copland.
Oh,
Copland is a film that I've gone on about a lot. I think we did Under the Radar films many episodes ago, and I think it was mine. For those who don't know, Copland is a film starring Sylvester Stallone.
You also chose Stallone as should have been nominated for an Oscar.
Should have been nominated for an Oscar. It's the best thing he's ever done, including Rocky. You know, it's a phenomenal piece of work. Sylvester Stallone plays a guy who wanted to be a cop, but he has a problem with his ear, so he didn't make the police force. But he becomes a sheriff instead, which is like one rung down. And he's the sheriff of this New Jersey, small New Jersey town, just over the River Hudson from New York City. And all the cops, all the NYPD, they live in this Jersey town. So people know him as being the sheriff of Copland. That's where the film gets his name. And it's about some sort of bent cops working on the island. And as well as Stallone, it stars Ray Liotta and Robert De Niro. And it's an absolutely brilliant film, all ends up. And it is the best thing that Sylvester Stallone's ever done. He put on a load of weight. So he didn't just look like the muscle man. He looked like a schlubby, fat, out of shape dude. It's a different kind of... There's none of the bravado or the macho-ness. He's very sort of down and on his dumps. And it's brilliant. And the fact that apparently he really chased this role. When he read the script, they didn't want him because they were like, well, he's not right for it and he'd cost too much anyway. I think he got paid scale, which is basically Hollywood minimum wage. He was happy to do it for damn near nothing.
Because he just wanted to do it.
Because he knew he could nail it, and he knew it was a good script. And he is so good in this. And I think it was underrated. People didn't latch onto it because they thought, oh, nobody wants to watch the Stallone film. You know, he's out of his element, not going to watch this. And people didn't give it the time of day. But it's brilliant. And it's one of those that I evangelize about, and I implore people, go out and watch Copland, because it's great. It's a brilliant film, and he is amazing.
I'm going to watch it tonight.
Do it, man. Do it, and then tell me. Text me. Tell me what you thought.
After he did the last Under the Radar, I went and bought this. It was really cheap steelbook, and I watched it, and I loved it, and it was just superb.
Yeah.
Absolutely mind-blowing film.
So that's me. 97, Copland.
So I had a pretty difficult time with this one, so any ideas what I'd have chosen in 1997?
Boogie Nights.
Damn. It actually changed this morning.
Right.
Because I've chatted to someone about a film that was in 1997. It was on my list for a while. It's only when I chatted about it, I realised how much I loved it. Austin Powers and the International Man of Mystery.
That's a great film. Yeah.
Before that, it was Good Will Hunting.
Yeah.
Because I obviously talk about that film quite a lot. Mm-hmm. But chatting to someone I know about this film, just I was laughing to myself. So even though I watched it three nights ago after researching, I thought I'd watch that again. I'm still laughing about it today. I mean... Even the smaller things like Will Ferrell.
Yeah. I always forget Mustafa. He's in it. Yeah.
It's just that moment where he gets burned and he's like, you shot me. You shot me right in the arm. It's one of the funniest things I've ever seen.
Because isn't he the guy, like, if you ask him to do something three times, he has to do
That's in the second one. Yeah. Damn, three times. When they ask him a question. But it's just such a funny film, man. And Mike Myers, this is when Mike Myers was at the peak of his powers, man.
Big time.
Before things like Love Guru.
Oh, dear.
Shame. And Liz Hurley.
Ooh.
She's such a babe in that film.
She is such a swing.
Yeah, totally.
Degrading. Nice. Come on.
But just everyone in this just adds to it. I mean, there's moments where I'm just laughing out loud. The bit where Basil's mum's there and he's like, that's not a woman, it's a man, and punches her in the face and tries to pull the wig off. It's just such old school kind of Mike Myers English spice move.
Yeah.
That's all it is. And it's so funny, guys.
It is laugh out loud funny.
And when he's just dancing in front of the fembots and like blowing their heads up, you can tell. I mean, I remember reading about him saying that he was a big James Bond fan when he was a kid, and this is his kind of piece to show how much of a Bond fan he was. And I can't stop laughing even now.
It's a great film. I've been on this bit of a trip recently of watching whole trilogies or whole, you know, groups of films. And probably about a month ago, I watched all three of the Austin Powers films. First two are phenomenal. What the fuck happened with the third one? That third one. I love gold. It's one of the shittest films I've ever seen. It is too much. It's just, it's terrible.
I think he's playing four characters by that point. Yeah. He's Dr. Evil. He's Fat Bastard. He's Austin Powers.
As well.
And he's Goldmember.
Yeah, exactly. It's like
too much.
He's doing the older Eddie Murphy route where you've got to play every character, including the women. No, mate.
And that accent.
Which, what, the Dutch?
The Dutch one.
Yeah,
I don't know. My Vinky was the key.
Tight like a tiger.
It wouldn't be right if we didn't ask the social media what they thought.
Yeah. Sorry, can I just apologise to everyone who's listening? If you can hear a kind of clinking, it is the ice cubes in my whiskey and coke.
Ben's gone off the rails.
Big time.
So, our good friend...
Off the wagon.
Fame's got to his head.
I just want to make a point that we're quite far into this episode and I've not mispronounced anything yet. This is quite good for me.
Setting himself up for a fall. You shouldn't have said anything because I'm going to be listening extra hard now.
At Bad Wolf, a good friend of the podcast, Good Will Hunting.
Great
choice. Can't knock him. Martin White, he's admitted it's quite a shameful choice. Titanic.
Awful.
Shouldn't admit that. That is especially appalling. On social media, knowing we're going to read it out.
Out in the real world, telling people that.
Roy McMillan, Grace Point Blank.
Great film.
Chris Murphy, LA Confidential for me, but a massive shout out to the guilty pleasure, Event Horizon.
I love both of those films.
So good.
Event Horizon is
scary.
Awesome.
Yeah.
But LA Confidential is cool.
Kaz has put As Good As It Gets, Good Will Hunting, and I have to say My Best Friend's Wedding.
Shame.
Unless she actually means her best friend's wedding.
She just went to video. She went to a really good wedding in 1997.
It's really good.
She just constantly watches the tape over and over again.
Paul from Blokebusters podcast, The Fifth Element. What a film.
Great film.
Absolutely love that film.
Yeah, Willis is awesome in that.
Marvel Presents Salo, Starship Troopers or Boogie Nights.
Both brilliant.
Boogie Nights Starship is so
Troopers.
Good.
Yeah.
I always forget as well, it's Paul Thomas Anderson. I just forget. Yeah.
God damn, this is a great year. It really is.
Colton has put, I always have a soft spot for Contact. Great film.
Yeah, I quite like McConaughey's really good in that.
Really bloody good. Chewbasher has put, if you'd asked me in 97, the 8-year-old would have said Men in Black.
Good choice.
But it has to now be LA Confidential.
Yeah, brilliant.
Couple more. Ian Nesbitt has put Easy, LA Confidential. And finally, Gareth Brown, got to be Event Horizon. It's brilliant. It really is. I want to watch that again.
Good. What a year this was.
It's fantastic. And you know, I'm thinking future rewatch LA Confidential because that film is the tits. Like Kevin Spacey is so
And Event
good
Horizon.
And Event Horizon, yeah.
Just and, that woman's friend's wedding video.
Yeah, well, apparently it's amazing.
Do you know what? Two films would make a tremendous sort of back-to-back film watching. Event Horizon and Sunshine by Danny Boyle.
So good. Let's do that one.
They're sort of thematically very similar. Yeah. Let's do those as a double feature.
So, on the next episode, we're going to 1996. And it's a bloody... The 90s are amazing.
The 90s rule, don't they? Are they as good as the 80s, Mark?
Never.
No.
It's rewatch time.
Booyah.
The less successful MC Hammer song. So, for our new listeners, rewatch is where we choose a film from the past and we decide we're going to watch it again. We're going to see, sometimes for the first time, some of us.
Yeah, sometimes the name is a lie. Yeah, it's not a rewatch, it's a watch.
It's a watch. But no, we had a run of bad films. We've started going on the better films again. Mm-hmm. So I thought it was time. The Star Wars, Episode 5, The Empire Strikes Back.
Shit, yeah.
Seeing as Ben's decided to pipe up already, go on.
One of the very best films of all time. It is in my top 5 list of the greatest films of all time, I believe. Is it? I think it is.
I think so.
Yeah. It
can be.
Because it fucking is one. It is a phenomenal piece of work. I was reading stuff about it today, actually, and I didn't know this, but apparently when it first came out back in 1980, the reviews were sort of fair to middling. People didn't latch onto it. It's only in time that people realised that not only was it a great film in its own right, it was the best film in the trilogy and also one of the very best films of all time. I think Empire did a poll not so long ago of the best films of all time and it was number one, quite bloody rightly. It's an absolutely amazing film. And we're going to get into the nitty-gritty in a minute, I'm sure. I've no doubt about that. I just want to talk about the sort of cultural resonance of it. This film came out in 1980. Return of the Jedi came out in May of 1983. I wasn't born until August of 1983, so these films predate me. But even as a kid, these were the things that I was maddest on, this and the 18. These are the things that meant the most to me. My brother is 10, so he's, 30 years removed from these films. Hold on, is that right? No, four.
Quite
yes, 30, some, I don't know, 20 years removed from these films. I'm used to the math. But even he is... He loves Star Wars. Is one of his favourite things. He can't wait to go and see the new one. And, he doesn't particularly care for the prequels because he's got a brain. But he loves the original trilogy. He loves Return of the Jedi. You know, my parents, they're the same and they're sort of obviously a generation older than me. It's the fact that this film started off resonant and has continued to be and forever shall be. I don't doubt that my brother's kids, you know, I hear I say my brother's kids, not mine, because I intend to never have children. When my brother has kids, I've no doubt they'll bloody love Star Wars as well. It's just, it's timeless. It's timeless. Yeah. It will never not be brilliant to anyone who sees it. It's perfect.
And there'll never be a child in the world that will not want to hold a lightsaber.
Damn straight. My bro has actually got, you know, like American, like nutty Americans in Texas, they have gun racks with their guns on. My bro has got a rack with his lightsabers on. And at last count, I think he's got something about 8, 9. He's got all of them. He's got like Mace Windu's purple one and all that kind of shit. He's got every lightsaber you've ever seen.
That's it though. It's like you say, the cultural resonance. Me and a friend of mine recently, we were sat around just after Star Wars had broke the record for pre-sales, pre-bookings across the world. And we said, is there any other franchise on the planet that could sell out cinemas months in advance in that space of time?
Nothing.
Because it was hours.
The Room 2.
It was hours.
Yeah.
It wasn't days, it was hours.
Pretty much every British film website crashed.
Yeah, you couldn't... I had people, because I was looking on Twitter, you couldn't get on the BFI to book the IMAX until 3 o'clock in the afternoon. And by the time you got on, you couldn't even get on the site to try. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You couldn't get them.
And in fact, I think the only major chain in the UK that didn't crash was our friends at Vue, because I think they actually put out a tweet saying, you know, if you can't get your tickets on Odeon, our website's working.
So, pop over to us. Fair play to them, man. Yeah. But one of the things that got me is, as well, we sat around discussing this, and we said, also, for the 7th film in a franchise, the preceding 3 not being very good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that's phenomenal.
Yeah, yeah. To think that basically they pretty much murdered the franchise and you know, did unspeakable things to its corpse. But still, after 3 terrible films, or, you know, the last one was acceptable.
All right.
But the fact that people are still blowing their beans over this new one. Yeah. It's crazy.
It's incredible. And I feel like I'm a child now about to go to the cinema.
Yeah.
And I'm getting excited. I'm sitting there already. I've bought t-shirts. I've got a mug. I've got a cup, a BB-8 cup. He could be the next fucking Jar Jar Binks for all I know. But I'm sucked in. I'm like, I cannot wait. We're going.
We're going on opening night, the 3 of us. And normally when we go and see a film to review, we go together, or, you know, occasionally a friend will come with us. The same night we're going, my mum, stepdad and brother are coming with us as well.
Two of your friends are coming.
Yeah.
Your brother's coming.
Adam's brother's coming.
It's like a big gathering.
It's a family affair, man, for all of us. It's going to be unreal. But we're getting away from the point. We're not even talking about Empire yet. We've not even got to the nitty gritty. So, I've done my bit. Talk to me about Empire. Come on.
Mark.
It is the best Star Wars film ever.
Hell yeah.
I don't think it will get beaten. Episode 7 is going to be bloody good, but you just got to look at this film as just being sensational. It is a perfect movie. I love, which we talked about on The Thing, that we have practical effects.
Yeah.
I love Yoda.
Yeah.
More than anything in the world. The introduction of him is so good as a puppet.
Do you know, I read something today, sorry to interrupt, but about Yoda. When they created the puppet, they wanted him to look old because he needs to be old and wise. They used a picture of Einstein and tried to replicate the wrinkles on Einstein's face on the Yoda mask so that he had that look. And I never knew. I read that today.
I'm going to pause it later and watch it on Blu-ray and see if it looks
like a picture of Einstein.
Yeah. Picture in picture, yeah.
When you say Einstein, do you mean Albert Einstein or Einstein the dog from Back to the Future?
Einstein the dog from Back to the Future. And they nailed it.
It is just a perfect movie. The characters are superb. I just love everything about it. The fight scene we've talked about, the big reveal, the practical effects over the CGI. But when they do the CGI, it looks like it was done in the 80s, but it still stands up today looking brilliant. I know he's gone and tinkered with everything and made it and stuff like this. And I've got the Blu-rays, and that's what I go to just for convenience. I just watch the special editions. But I one day want to own the originals that you can somehow one day give. I think Disney are in talks to give us the unaltered, edited versions.
I heard they're going to do Blu-rays of the original versions.
And that's the day that I will spaff my load and literally be happy forever. You know what I mean? I will
hopefully
literally...
not in the Disney store.
That's already been happening to myself.
Over a BB-8 toy.
Yeah, I'm banned from there for that. But it is just a perfect film. And the worst thing was, when I was watching it again over the weekend, is I said to myself, why have I left this out of my top 5 films of all time? But I have a kind of... I'll announce something now that I'm not sure you're aware of.
Oh, no.
So a lot of people grew up with Star Wars, and a lot of people were very, very big on their childhood, having the figures and everything.
Yeah.
I didn't see Star Wars until I was 19 years old.
No, I did know this. You told me. Yeah, you didn't watch it until you were at uni.
At uni,
you told me this. Yeah.
And I got a lot of grief.
You actually mentioned this on a podcast.
You did. Oh, you did, back in the day,
This is my Still Alice thing kicking in again. But it's shocking, really, because I wish I could be like your brother now and have the lightsabers. I mean, I still do, and I'm an adult that does it. It's just a bit more weird, I suppose, buying all this stuff. But yeah. I'm just a bit annoyed with myself because I was obsessed with Goonies and Indiana Jones and everything else.
This is a conversation we had back in the day. I grew up in a Star Wars family rather than an Indiana Jones family. Yeah. So even though my mum loves Indiana Jones, it wasn't a series of films that we watched together as a family. We were a Star Wars family. Ever since I can remember being able to point my eyes at a screen, we were watching Star Wars. And that's why, you know, I grew up with it.
Mum and Dad, if you're listening to this, you suck.
Basically child abuse.
I grew up in neither.
Shame.
My parents didn't make me watch Indiana Jones. They didn't make me watch Star Wars. I remember the name of the kid who first introduced me to Star Wars. He was my best friend at primary school. He was called Ben.
Nice.
I've not spoken to him for 20 odd years.
Adam, I've been meaning to tell you this for a while, but that was me.
You're a lot older than I am.
I just hung around the school.
But the fact that I've not spoken to this kid in about 20 years, but I still remember his full name because he introduced me to Star Wars, that's how much an effect Star Wars had on me. I went out and asked my parents to get me these Star Wars videos, VHS at the time. And my dad did, but he's like, I don't know why you're interested in that kind of thing. But I loved it. It was great.
Yeah.
I still love Star Wars.
It's absolutely phenomenal.
And as a kid, A New Hope was my favourite.
Yeah.
I loved A New Hope. It was great. And it still is a great film. Standalone, you know.
Yeah.
It can be watched basically by itself quite easily. As I grew up, it was all about Empire.
And weirdly enough, as a kid, Return of the Jedi was my favourite. I thought it was brilliant. Everything with Jabba. I love the Ewoks. Anyone who says that the Ewoks are shit will get a bloody five-knuckle shuffle. I'm not going to wank them off. I'm definitely not
doing
that.
The Ewoks are dickheads. Come on. Unzips.
Oh, he's got his Tommy pants on.
Always.
I will hit anyone who says the Ewoks are shit because Ewoks rule. And as a kid, that was my favourite film. But again, same, Adam. As I've grown up, I've realised that it's Empire by a million bloody miles.
I want to go back and change our top fives and just stick Empire in.
Can't have it, mate.
Can't do it.
Next year.
Gotta wait for the anniversary.
Yeah, next year, yeah. We've got to wait back 11 months till we do
Then I'll
Alice.
Be like, man, it's episode 7.
Yeah, could be.
Could be. Yeah, could be.
I just love Star Wars, and we could just do a Star Wars special and talk about it forever, but it's one of those films, when Adam announced it, I was excited, because we have been doing bad films. We have been doing really, really bad films.
We have done some wank, yeah.
And it was just so nice to do the thing, and that was my thing, and it was kind of like, Ben, this is the first time, just for us three to all be on the same page and be loving it, and knowing that none of us were going to go, oh, for fuck's sake, we've got to watch this. It's not Troll 2. And I remember watching it at the weekend, and I'll be honest, I just sat there and I was like, I'm going to stick on Return of the Jedi now. And then I was like, actually, I just want to watch him again. I just want to watch the whole lot.
I did the exact same thing. I watched Empire, and then I put Return of the Jedi on straight afterwards.
Yeah, you got to, didn't you?
It's rude not to.
And loads of people on Twitter and Facebook were like, oh, guys, I'm going to be doing that next week or in a couple of weeks leading up to the next one. And I will. I'll be...
You know, I'll do it again,
I'm going to watch all six. Even the three that I dislike, I'm going to watch all six prior to the new one coming out. In not order of release, but in order of story. Yeah.
I'm going to watch 1 to 6, definitely.
But we're still sort of circularly talking about Star, which is amazing. I could do this all fucking day. But Empire. So let's get into the nitty-gritty of Empire. Let's go through it. The thing about Empire is there are so many individual elements, all of which are unreal.
Mm-hmm.
Let's hit it with Hoth.
Hoth. Hoth is the one thing about the Battlefront beta demo that I really enjoyed.
Yeah, that was cool.
The fact you can go the AT-AT walkers, you know, that whole battle is fantastic. But even prior to that, Luke out in the snow, Han going out to rescue him.
Yeah,
that Yeti,
Wampa.
The Wampa. How cool is that entire amazing planet moment?
It's awesome. I was going to say awful, then wrong. It's awesome. And then, you know, the bit where Luke's basically dying in the snow and Han turns up and has to cut open the Tauntaun's belly and he has to put the Tauntaun guts on him. Yeah.
At this point, I want to say that if you ever get chance and someone says, right, Mark, you can have a spin-off, I want a Wampa film. I do. I love that character. It looks so fucking awesome.
Yeah.
I tried not to swear on this episode, and I think it's my first time, but...
I've been effing and jeffing like nuts.
I fucking loved it.
One of the... you know the remastered versions they did, and Lucas, like, twatted around with shit that didn't need to be messed with? The one thing that I like about the re-release is there's a bit where you actually see more of Wampa. Mm-hmm. You see him sort of stand up, and you see the full body length, and that's one of the... That's good, because I think there should have been more. And at the time when the film was made in the late 70s, early 80s, they didn't have the technology or whatever to make him look good. So that was one of the few things that I think was better. The only other thing I can think of, actually, that was better in the remastered versions are scenes in sort of in the TIE fighters and whatnot, when they're looking, you're as if you're the pilot and you're looking out the window.
Yep.
The actual skies and stuff
they look great.
Look great on the remastered version. Yeah. They're the only things that were in any way improvements.
But I love the way that they still kept in the kind of weird way that the Wampa moves. It does look weird. It's kind of a bit scatty, like sort of stop animation, but I love it. It really does look great.
It does.
And they could have totally CGI shitted that. And I'm surprised he hasn't, but leave that. I like that.
There's one of the impressive things about, because Hoth as a location in general was amazing to look at. And all the designs for everything, like the snow speeders.
Yeah.
How cool did they look? They had that kind of weird triangular formation. Mm-hmm. And then with the two kind of lasers sticking out, they could do the, when they're bringing down the walkers.
Yeah.
It's just such a cool composition.
Yeah.
I think it's the only word I could use.
The AT-ATs as well, the walkers, they are phenomenal.
Superb.
Yeah.
Again, absolutely mind-blowing.
Another thing I was about to say, I thought I was a Star Wars nerd. I am a Star Wars nerd. But again, reading up today, there's other things I've found. Like apparently the original design for the AT-ATs, they had wheels. And they were like, well, they look shit and they wouldn't work on snow, really, if they had like one wheel. So they came up with these lumbering sort of elephantine AT-AT walkers. And they're in the AT-STs as well.
I'm just picturing them now being like wheeled. That'd be shit. Look, a rocking horse.
Plus, it adds to the element. If you're on wheels, you're kind of moving at a constant pace. Mm. Whereas the fact that they're walking kind of slows them down a bit, and it just adds that kind of tense element to
harrowing.
Yeah. So, okay, we've done Hoth. Bespin Cloud City. Come on now.
Cloud City.
If I could ever go anywhere, I'm going there.
Yeah.
That whole bit where the Falcon first comes in and they've got the people to the side of them, like landing them in, and then Han and Lando's reunion.
Amazing.
Absolutely super. I love Lando.
Lando's one of the coolest motherfuckers in the game.
Just that reunion where he just, is he a friend? Is he an enemy? What is he?
Yeah.
Because you just don't know by the end of it. Because then you start to realise that Han Solo doesn't really have friends.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone he knows, he's cheated out of money, stolen something from.
Yeah, he's either swindled them or they've swindled him. Exactly, yeah. Cloud City is phenomenal. The look of it is great. Some of the denizens, the characters there, like Lobot and all those, and the Ugnaughts and all.
Really freaky. Yeah. So well done. And again, it's the puppetry again that we see, and the set design is superb.
Yeah, old school prosthetics, man.
It's what we need.
Everything looks great, and it's got a very sort of Flash Gordon kind of vibe. And
big time.
Yeah, it's amazing. Again, one of the things that annoyed me about the reissues, you know, one of the things that happens on Bespin Cloud City is that Boba Fett turns up and captures Han. And then, of course, I think we discussed this maybe on episode one. But there's a bit where... Boba Fett says, he's no good to me dead. And in the original film, it's an American voice, he's no good to me dead. And it's, you know, brilliant, perfectly delivered. Then, of course, in the prequels, it turns out that Boba Fett is the cloned son of Jango Fett. Because Jango Fett was played by New Zealand actor Temuera Morrison.
Is Ben actually going to do a New Zealand accent
big
here?
Big time.
Or is he going to do South African again?
Well, I've been told it's South African, but we'll let the listeners decide. So, because it's played by Temuera Morrison, a Kiwi actor, they then redub the dialogue so that Boba Fett actually says, he's no good to me, did.
That's pretty good.
It's New Zealand. That's Kiwi. Jog on. But that drives
me
mad.
It's very out of place. It really does suck. And it's kind of like, I look as if to say, is that like, there's the fucking prawns. I'm like, where did that come from?
The fucking prawn.
Well, that is South Africa.
But it's terrible. It's dreadful.
Because is that the only thing that Boba Fett says in that film?
Yeah.
Because that's why it was so iconic. You just remember him saying, he's no good to me dead.
And that's why he had such a big fan base.
Yeah.
Because he was portrayed as this badass dude.
Uh-huh.
And then he had that gruff voice where he's no good to me dead.
Yeah.
Like that.
And then when he says he's no good to me dead,
he just loses
I thought it was Flight of the Conchords. Yeah. I thought he was going to start doing some sort of acoustic comedy song.
That'd be amazing. But hold on, Boba Fett, Darth Vader, the bit where they walk into the dining room.
Yeah.
And Darth Vader's just stood there and the Empire music hits.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it's bone chilling.
Yeah.
Still really now, is. This weekend, my little hairs were sticking up. I'm like, this is incredible.
Again, that's because he's not put his trousers up yet. I can see the little hairs.
Well, you know I shave for you.
Too much information.
So let's get the introduction of Yoda now.
No, hold on. I don't want to leave Bespin yet. Because, of course, we've got Han being encased in carbonite, right? Which is unreal. Yeah. And one of the... We've talked a bit about films where you get people who improvise cool lines. So we talk all the time about Roy Batty and Blade Runner improvising the Tears in Rain speech. One of the greatest improvised lines of all time is, "I love you. I know." Yeah. Come on. That is some ice cold shit.
Yeah.
Han Solo, man. Iceman. Unreal.
So good.
I take issue with you saying that Mando's the coolest guy in the galaxy.
That's true.
Han Solo is the coolest guy in the galaxy.
Straight.
I'm going to get him again in 7.
Yeah.
Oh. He looks cool as
fuck. Holy moly. So, introduction of Yoda, Dagobah.
One of my favourite parts of the film, to be honest. I love it. I love the dark and dinginess and the... Mm-hmm. The
I love Dagobah.
Yeah. Should we go?
Yeah, let's go. No, I love Dagobah.
Yeah.
The smoke.
Yeah. Oh.
Everything, the trees.
I'm going to throw a spanner into the works.
I don't like it.
All right, brilliant. It's true. It's the one thing in the film that I don't particularly like. I think it's too slow. I love Yoda, of course. Do or do not. There is no try. Gene, that is a motto I live by when I'm not being lazy. but that I think it's very slow. Whereas the rest of the film has this hyperkineticism. It's always moving. There's always something happening. Whereas Dagobah kind of drags it down a little bit. And there are times when it goes to Dagobah and I think, no, go back to Leia and Han. I want to see what they're up to. It's great. It is great. But it's my least favourite bit of the film, Dagobah.
I think that it needs to be there. Otherwise, it's just too fast-paced.
Oh, of course. It couldn't exist without it. Absolutely right. It is integral. I'm not saying they should have got rid of it in any way. It had to be there. But it's still the thing where I'm watching it. I'm like, this is serving a purpose. This is great. But get me back to where the action is.
Disagree.
Disagree. 2-1. That means you're wrong.
Bloody democracy.
Who thought we'd disagree on Empire?
But yeah, Yoda's introduction. He looks great. I love the puppet. I'm glad he didn't CGI that because I thought he might go back and remaster it and do some stupid shit.
And then he'd be like jumping around doing jumping jacks and spinny wheels and fuck off.
But that was the thing about Yoda. Like, he was old. He was wise. But we didn't have anything to measure his strength by until he lifted the X-Wing.
Yeah.
And at that point, it's just like, okay, this dude's the real deal. Because even Obi-Wan didn't do shit like that.
Yeah.
And that's what was so cool about it. Then, like you say, Attack of the Clones, they get him doing all this jumpy bollocks.
Bloody hell.
Awful.
I love the fact he can fit in your backpack as well.
Time, yeah.
It's what you need.
Good accessory, isn't it?
I've seen really cool rucksacks that people have with that. And I can't get away with it. People are like, you are an absolute knobhead if I wore that. But I would like one.
Wear one to work next week.
Where are we at now then in the film?
Dagobah covered. What's next?
It's taking them off as we go along.
I think that's kind of, I mean, there's just obviously the space chase when they're trying to find the Falcon, the Imperials.
And they're in the asteroid belt.
And then Han does that amazing maneuver where he attached himself onto the Star Destroyer, which is really cool.
I thought that looked more dated when I used to watch it a few years ago. When I watched it yesterday, I was actually that looks fine.
It does look like.
A lot of filmmakers have kind of gone back to that. Like, obviously, Interstellar did. They went back to kind of models and backdrops instead. It looks cool.
It works.
It looks fantastic. One of the scenes I love in space is when they're first hiring the bounty hunters to go out and look for Han and Luke and whatnot. And obviously, there's Boba Fett. And then you see this sort of motley array of bounty hunters, like IG-88 and Dengar and Bosk. These dudes. Oh, goddamn, I love that film.
Do you know this is the second Star Wars film I've chose for a rewatch?
Of course it is. You did Phantom Menace as well, didn't you?
Which was not so
positive. So which is better?
Which is not so positive.
Definitely gone up in the world with this one.
I think that kind of covers off everything.
What more can we say? This film is badass.
I kind of wish I had a whiskey so I could toast it.
I should have offered you one, really, shouldn't I?
If you are listening to this and you've not seen this film, you're either on a life support machine and not around, you have no access to TV. Yeah.
Or you have literally been living in Joseph Fritzl's basement.
And all I ask is that you escape or you come off that life support machine and you watch this.
Do you know what I can't abide? Like, obviously now all of us are, you know, getting crazy about the new Star Wars coming out. And I'll say to people, oh, have you seen the new Star Wars trailer? Oh, did you see the new toy? And they go, I don't like Star Wars. Well, you're dead to me then.
Yeah.
Honestly, they're beneath me. Yeah. They're second-class citizens. They're not worth their time.
Yep.
Especially the people, if you haven't seen it, if you've never got around to seeing it, then fine. I think that's a shame. You know, pull your thumb out your arse and watch the films. But if you've seen it, like, I don't like Star Wars, well, get bent.
I am done
with you because I have nothing in common with you anymore.
You are dead inside.
Indeed.
I do that with Kirby Enthusiasm. I say, have you seen Kirby Enthusiasm? Oh, I don't get it. That old bloke walking around, you're dead to me. Yeah, that's it. It's done. I'm not going to get on with you.
My conversation goes, do you like Star Wars? Oh, yeah. I'm not really a big fan. Which ones have you seen?
Yeah. Yeah. That's the problem. And I've had that conversation where people say to me, oh, I tried to watch one of them. Oh, what was it called now? Something about a menace. You're an idiot. Don't watch one of
them. I like the pod race. A New Hope. Let's score this.
Big time. Shit, it's 10. Let's not beat around the bush. Yeah. It's 10.
I think it's probably about a 2 for
me. You're an idiot.
This is a perfect 10.
Of course it fucking is.
So, please now, Ben, it's your choice.
Yeah.
Keep this up. I know everyone we can joke and like, oh, here you go, and it's going to be E.T. Yeah. No. What are you going to give us?
Why would he choose that? He hates these.
I'm not doing the Joey Tribbiani trick. I'm telling you now, it's a good film. And it's a film that I've always loved. But then I was thinking about it the other day and I realised I haven't actually seen it in maybe 15 years. It might not hold up. But as far as I'm aware, I believe it will. So I've got 3 words for you. Beetlejuice. Beetlejuice. Beetlejuice.
Nice.
Love it.
So we are watching Beetlejuice. Can't wait.
Love it.
Blockbuster videos. Sorry.
What?
Don't want to get sued.
Hello? Oh, it's ITV.
Blockbuster videos, round 2 time. Round 1 was won by... Oh, hold on. Who was it now?
Let's have a think. It was you.
Oh, it was me, wasn't it? Yeah. That's right. I absolutely battered you, didn't I, Adam?
Oh, you did.
Was it 5-1, was it?
I did listen back and it was 5. Yeah, the 5.
I completely forgot. Yeah. It was a bad day for me. You know, I wasn't at the office. I feel I've let the fans down. Yeah. I'm going to come back strong.
Well,
this is it,
you see. You know, you can bring it back here. You can get your fans back on the side. They'll have their Adam t-shirts on and all that again.
I'm like Ronda Rousey.
Big time. Ooh.
And you're playing me.
She got her head caved in, didn't she?
Big time.
Here's a prediction for you. Because she lost her belt, Ronda Rousey will wrestle at WrestleMania this year. For the wrestling fans listening,
yep.
put a few quid on it.
Mania 32, she'll be there and she'll take the belt off probably Nikki Bella.
One of these divs.
Or Paige.
As will I.
Nice.
Yeah, Adam's going, isn't you? Going to WrestleMania 32, the jammy swine. Anyway, we're digressing.
I'd love to take Nikki Bella's belt off. Anyway.
Shame. Degrading.
Which I hate.
Anyway,
Blockbuster videos. So what we do, we're ripping an homage to Blockbusters, the old ITV game show, whereby there is a board with a load of octagons or hexagons or some shit, and they've all got letters on, and then you pick a letter, and then the question is based on that letter. So, I have 26 questions. Every letter of the alphabet. You're going to pick a letter. We're going to do 5 each. Person who gets the most wins. I've actually forgotten to do a tiebreak question, but it doesn't matter. We'll use one of the questions that's on the list.
He's going to beat me. We'll I'm never going to get 5 right.
And if it doesn't work, we'll do rock, paper, scissors.
I've only got one last week. Yeah.
If it's like a film name or something, or if it's something with one word, obviously it's going to be the initial of that. If it's a person's name with two names, it's their first name, first initial. So if the question is...
What's a film that shit that Ben hates? Forrest Gump. F.
Yeah, beginning with F. Yeah, exactly. So that's how it works. Yeah. What is the worst fucking film ever made? F. Forrest Gump. Correct.
I'm sure. Okay. Battlefield Earth.
Oh, that's true. Actually, Battlefield. And yeah, and
is that
between
one point to me already.
Sandwiched in between them is XXX, of course.
Well, good luck with this, because I really spanned it up, and when I listened back, I was an absolute car crash. So,
what, as the presenter?
Yeah.
Shame.
I didn't do very well.
Just not built for it. Eh?
No, I come up with the idea, and then I let you guys now, you know.
Oh, bragging now. Back in the
So I'll be the one sued.
Mark,
you get out of prison.
Good, I'm glad. I'm going to let you pick the letter first. Mark, go for it.
Can I have an A?
That's not how you ask the question.
Can I have an A, please, Ben?
Correct.
Thank you.
What A starred Audrey Tautou in the title role?
Amelie.
Correct. Adam, what letter would you like?
Give me an M, please, Ben.
Can I have an N, please, Ben? Give me an N, please, Ben. He thinks he's an American at McDonald's.
Give it me now.
Yeah. Give me a Big Mac and fries.
Fuck you.
What letter was it?
M for mother.
M now.
M for mother.
Please, Ben.
Which M directed 4 Weddings and a Funeral?
I literally have no idea.
Any ideas, Mark? You don't get a bonus point.
I've never seen that film in my life.
Nor should you.
No.
Just for glory. Mike Newell.
Oh.
Former Leicester and Luton striker.
It's not that Mike Newell, no, sadly. I mean, he was talented, but not that much.
Can I have a E, please, Ben?
Which E is the real surname of Charlie Sheen?
It's your question, Mark.
I have no fucking idea. Edwards.
It's Estevez.
Oh.
He is the brother of Emilio Estevez and the son of Martin Estevez, aka Martin Sheen.
You learn something new every day.
Yeah. So still 1-0 to you, Mark. Adam, question two.
Give me an N, please, Ben.
Which N tells the fictional story of mass murderers Mickey and Mallory Knox?
Natural Born Killers?
Correct. One apiece. Mark.
Can I have a P, please, Ben?
Which P stars Seth Rogen and James Franco as stoners on the run from a drug lord?
Pineapple Express.
Yeah, there you go.
Topical.
Yeah.
We're linking.
Linking.
Give me a B, please, Ben.
Easy one. Which B is the home country of Jean-Claude Van Damme?
Belgium.
Correct. The muscles from Brussels.
Can I have an S, please, Ben?
Which S is the English city where the Full Monty was set?
Sheffield.
Correct. What score are we on now?
I'm 3-2.
And how many have we had? Was that your fourth? That was your fourth. Yeah, so this is your fourth, Adam. Okay.
No pressure.
Give me a D, please, Ben.
It's always funny.
You're not having my D. What D is the film that won Matthew McConaughey an Oscar?
Dallas Buyers Club.
Correct.
Oh my lord, the pressure's on.
Is this question five?
Mm-hmm.
Can I have?
If you get this right,
Then it can.
Oh, it could still. Yeah. Okay.
It's tough.
Mm-hmm.
Can I have a T, please, Ben?
This is a tough one. Possibly the toughest.
Fuck's sake.
Because it's very specific. What T is where Sonny Corleone is killed in The Godfather? One of the most famous scenes from one of the most famous films.
Turin.
Adam, do you know for a bit of glory?
I don't.
It's a toll booth. It's the famous toll booth gunning down scene.
It is. And for some reason, I was going to say parking lot. Because
it wouldn't have been far off. Yeah.
I'm going to lose.
So if Adam gets this right,
he is the winner.
Adam wins. If Adam gets it wrong, we're going to have to go to some sort of sudden death type
situation.
Well,
we're going to ask another question.
That's what we'll do. We'll do a sudden death knockout. Yeah. Adam, what letter?
K, please, Ben.
Ooh. Oh, this is perfect. It's a Star Wars question. What K is the home planet of the Wookiee race in Star Wars?
Kashyyyk.
Kashyyyk it is, my friend. Adam wins.
I'm happy to lose on that Adam question. Wins. Good work.
Well done.
Thank you to all the fans. I really appreciate your support on Twitter over the last few weeks. It's been difficult for me. But I've come back.
He's back.
Stronger than ever.
I've got to beat Ben next week and then it'll be a all round.
Be a rock, paper, scissors.
Yep.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So, I'm just thinking about the previous games that we've played. So what did we start with? We started with the rating game.
Yep.
And you won that, didn't you, Adam? Mm-hmm. And then what was the next game after that?
That was Famovie Fortunes.
That wasn't the next one.
It was, I think. I think we've done three games.
Famovie Fortunes, then it was Faster Mind.
And who won Famovie Fortunes? Me.
Yep.
Yeah. Faster Mind doesn't count. That was a one-off.
Yep.
So you and I are still one up overall. So to get, to get some self-respect back.
I'm going to be practicing stone, paper, scissors in the mirror against myself.
Dude, I'd practice your movie trivia first.
So find out in 2 weeks if I can actually win something. Listener questions time.
Do you love this?
I do really bloody love this
bit. Me too.
So keep them coming.
Interactive.
We'll start with KO, which is @K_O. She's doing a blog at the moment, and she's doing a 30 before 30, and she's watching sets of three films at a time.
Has she given us the blog address?
Nope.
Shame, she should have.
But
free advertising.
We'd have publicised
it. What I'll do is I'll retweet it if you follow this up.
Do that.
But she's just asked, what would your choices be if you're setting yourself a day in to binge watch? What's your sort of thing?
I tend to binge watch TV more than...
Yeah.
As do I. But then again, it depends on my mood. It depends if I tell you what, if I'm hungover and just sort of feeling the booze gloom, I just have to watch comedy. And like I said to you earlier, I've been on a bit of a trip of watching groups of films.
Mm-hmm. You're loving your bloody bad comedies like Aeroplane, aren't you? You're watching a lot of sort of Naked Gun.
That's it. I had a day of watching spoof films. So I watched all
you
three.
You watched about 10.
I did. I watched all three. It was a Sunday. I was hungover as all hell. I had nothing else to do other than worry about work the next day. So I watched all three of the Naked Gun films. I watched all five of the Scary Movie films. And some other garbage as well, just all those silly sort of spoof films. But it was a great day. It depends on the mood, basically, is the answer to that question.
I'm always big on... Big. I always watch Big. If I'm ever at home on a Sunday, there's nothing on telly, I'll always go to Big, Gremlins and Back to the Future. I can happily watch those films all the time, and I'll always binge on them. And as we did the rewatch with Star Wars, I'll find myself watching two or three.
Mm-hmm. I'm a big gamer as well. So
we all know that.
Yeah, I like playing games. There's only probably two times in my life I've been too hungover to even play a game. So I've actually felt sick as the screen was moving. That was not a nice time.
So I hope that answers your question. One day we'll ask, what games do you play when you're absolutely hungover?
Not interested in answering that.
Once we start doing a gaming podcast, maybe.
Coming soon. TV podcast.
It's going the week after gaming. The TV one, yeah.
Disclaimer, we are not starting a games podcast. Yeah.
Jesse Lauren, if you had to choose a film a composer to score your life story, we've never been asked that.
That's great.
Who would you choose?
Well, now, my life is just a constant dramatic turn of events, so it has to be Hans Zimmer. When I walk out of my flat early morning mansion. On the way to my office job, you just need to hear boom, boom.
That would be it's crazy, isn't it? Because none of our lives are exciting.
Not so much.
To be scored by anyone. Imagine John Williams running for a bus.
That's pretty cool.
And you're running after the bus.
I would have to go with, I'd leave it in the safe hands of Cameron Crowe, because he loves Alice in Chains, Pearl Jam, and all the bands I listen to. Mm-hmm. And I'd just be happy to say, look, go for your CD collection, Cameron, and just pick some cool music. And just while I'm walking to work or going to Sainsbury's on my lunch to buy a pack of sandwiches, just stick some Pearl Jam on or something. That'd be awesome.
I didn't realise he composed all of Pearl Jam's music.
But the thing is, you get that, don't you? Because you have people who do the scores, like your Zimmers and your Williams, and you have curators, people who create a soundtrack, which a lot of directors do, on a similar tack. I would love Tarantino to create the music of my life.
I don't think it's dramatic enough.
I'll just be walking down the street, you know, going to Mackey's, and there'll just be some sweet sort of 70s funk playing in the background, and then Tim Roth's on the corner.
So that's what we'll come back as well with, our idea of our film. That'd be good. But I'd also like Edgar Wright. He'd pick some cool stuff. Probably Beck, as I'm ordering my Subway.
Have we done this one before? Have we ever talked about if the film was made of your life, who would you want to play you?
No, but we can either bring that back. Tommy Wiseau.
Should we bring that back? Let's have a think about this.
Now,
this
Danny DeVito.
This is not a listener question. It's a podcaster question. It's podcaster question.
Okay.
It's to all of you. In the film of your life, who would you want to play you?
This is going
to
be funny, because when we actually do come out with the answers, we're all going to be criticising each other's choice.
Yeah, I mean, you know, off the top of my head, for you, Adam, it would be Danny DeVito. And for you, Mark, it would be Ed Sheeran.
Says Chris Kamara. But yeah. My initial instinct to say it, which will change, is Tommy Wiseau.
Of course you'll say that. Right, I want genuine... No, we've done the joke answers now.
Yeah.
So I want the genuine answer next time round. Who would you want to play you in the movie of your life?
Cool. Sean Kinnery, which is at Sore and Confused. Describe your perfect Sunday.
Perfect.
I love that question. Describe your perfect Sunday.
Watching the 3 Naked Gun films and the 5 Scary Movie.
Having the Police Academy, 7 films in a trot. Yeah. To be honest, mine is order a Domino's pizza.
Ooh.
Hi, Domino's. watch 80s films with cold bottles of Peroni, cold Coke in a glass bottle, tubs of Minstrels. They're unreal.
Now, you're talking about the confectionery, not white people with blackface.
No. Yeah. And I would just watch 80s films. I'd watch Back to the Future. I'd watch Gremlins. I'd watch lots of John Hughes films. And I'd just stuff my face with tubs and tubs of Minstrels and drink cold Coke.
I have recently discovered the delights of the Bloody Mary. I'm in my 30s now. I've never had a Bloody Mary before. But people always said they're a good hangover cure. If you've never had a Bloody Mary, it's vodka, tomato juice, Tabasco, Worcestershire sauce, black pepper, celery, lemon. And out of nowhere, about a week ago, I thought, I want to try one of those. Phenomenal. Life-changing.
Coming soon.
Game
That's
changer.
Your ideal Cocktail Sunday. Cast.
So my ideal Sunday is get up about, I don't know, 2. there or thereabouts. Get a Bloody Mary on the go. Throw on Anchorman.
Is that it?
Have some food delivered.
Yep.
Done.
I think,
and it's not as if it's an out there proposition. That is most of my Sundays now. That is my Sunday.
Ben's cocktail hour coming soon to iTunes.
He lives Cop-cast. His ideal Sunday.
Cockcast. Searching for Cockcast on iTunes. What's your Sunday, dude? Your perfect Sunday.
Probably original trilogy.
Cool.
Star Wars.
Not The Matrix.
No, not The Matrix. And then either a Sunday roast.
Oh, nice. Oh,
big time.
Or if the weather's good, a barbecue.
Beautiful. No, or a roast Sunday dinner on a barbecue.
The gravy.
Go crazy. Go crazy. I hope that answers your answer, Sean.
Answers your answer.
Yeah. J. Coles. Is there a film that you were really, really, really excited to see that turned out to be a massive disappointment when you did, but all three of you will lose points if you actually come back to me and say The Phantom Menace?
Shame, because that's exactly what I was
going
to say.
I was literally going,
Oh, no, I'm going to lose points.
I'm going to say it now because I stupidly let myself get this excited. Mm. Jurassic World. Yep. Because I did get sucked in and I was like, it's going to be like Jurassic Park. Like, Mark, you knobhead. Like, stop and think about this. It's been 20-something years. It's not Spielberg. It's not going to be as good. Yeah. But I never listened.
Interstellar.
Yes. Absolutely. Because Nolan had a flawless filmography prior to that.
McConaughey
was on fire. It was the reconnaissance. And he was brilliant in it. No fault lies with him, but that film was shite.
Actually, to be fair, though, I recently watched a Blu-ray of it.
Shouldn't have to.
And it did actually look better at home, which I can't believe I'm saying, because it's made for the big screen. But it was actually quite good just on TV and just as kind of a hungover Sunday. Mm. But it's still nowhere near as what we wanted it to be.
Wank. Well, love is more powerful than science. Everyone knows that. Anne Hathaway told me, so it must be true.
She wouldn't lie.
David McCabe, 32. Is Zack Snyder a menace to people's childhood memories?
Shit, no, because one of my childhood memories is reading Watchmen.
And he delivered the goods.
And his film was badass.
Mm-hmm. I like Snyder.
Dawn of the Dead was one of my favourite horrors growing up, mm-hmm. and I love the remake of that, and I never often say that about horror remakes.
I often find he's very good when he has source material.
Yeah.
When he doesn't and he's writing his own stuff, that's when he gets a bit
step away from
that's
the
when
script.
He gets a bit mental.
But the thing is, I actually really like
Sucker Punch?
Yeah, I do. It's not a great film, but it's a film that sort of, blows your fucking eyeballs
visually
out.
Visually, it's a masterclass. Yeah. But the story just is all over the place.
Oh, it's mental. It's insane. It's the ramblings of a cretin. But it's visually, it really is a feast for the eyes. And then Man of Steel, I've actually grown. I watched the
again,
first time.
Source material.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of the Superman character. You know, I don't care about an all-powerful alien. Not interesting to me. So people are too married to that character. Mm-hmm. So a lot of the things they didn't like about Man of Steel was, spoiler alert, that he killed, Zod at the end and all that kind of shit. I enjoyed it at the time, and I've seen it a couple of times since, and I enjoy it more and more, especially sort of knowing where the sequel's going.
Yeah, this is something I mentioned a while back, that I thought that it was going to be retroactively better after we'd seen Dawn of Justice.
It is, because one of the biggest complaints about the film was that Superman and Zod basically destroy a city. Someone did the maths and worked out that they killed more people than 9/11. So apparently one of the plot threads of the sequel is going to be people are against Superman because of the destruction he brought on their city, which makes sense. So, it doesn't even need to be retroactively good for me. Just that in principle makes sense. And I like the film as it was. And, it's not the first film to kill a load of innocents. Every bloody blockbuster does that and no one cares. But, yeah, I like Snyder.
That's a pretty good detailed answer for
you.
You
have an
there,
answer.
Mate.
What do you think?
Because of Dawn of the Dead. Mm. I just got to see this Batman and Superman film at the moment because I'm just a bit skeptical. I'm really like, oh, come on. But no, I like him and he's all right. Mm-hmm. I didn't like the last Superman.
On that note, just quickly, have you guys seen that apparently Suicide Squad's been given a PG-13 rating?
Yeah, that disappoints
That's
me.
That's really annoyed me.
Yeah. At least sort of a 15 or something would have been fine.
PG-13.
Going to sell t-shirts.
It's the Will Smith effect, isn't it? Can't do a hardcore film, Will Smith.
Couple of last questions.
Or he might end up doing proper hardcore films. The way his career's going.
That would be dreadful.
I'd watch it.
I think he's still going to be all right.
Jessica Jenny, which famous actress would you like as a wife?
Degrading. I don't want to reduce women to objects of desire.
Well, Ben doesn't want a wife.
What the question should have been is, what famous actress would you like as an inspiration, a muse? That's the sort of question we want from our listeners.
But look,
the answer to the original question is Scarlett Johansson by a million miles. Done.
We had about 6 months ago someone say, which celebrity would you most like to bang?
That they did.
So I'm much preferred that we asked Thanks, Jessica, for at least...
Thank you, Jessica. We have a higher class of listener now. We appreciate you. But it's Scarlett Johansson because she's the greatest.
Yeah, I'm going with Scarlett as well.
I'm going with Jenna Coleman from Doctor Who. I absolutely love her.
She's gorgeous.
And at the moment, as a wife, Tina Fey, because I would really enjoy...
Oh, yeah, she'd be hilarious.
I would love to spend time with her.
There is nothing sexier to me than funny women. So Tina Fey, Amy Poehler... Yep.
Megan Mullally, Nick Offerman's wife.
Oh, God, that's what I mean. She's in her 50s and she's still hot as hell because she is so great. Amy Schumer.
That's what I mean.
Funny women.
So Tina Fey... for the sitting there watching films and just being entertained. Yeah. But I'm absolutely in love with Jenna Coleman. I think she's gorgeous.
Fair play.
Final question. Andy Bentley. If you could bring back someone that's passed away, a famous actor or actress, for one final movie, who would you resurrect and get them to star in that film?
Shit.
I'll answer straight away. And he's the man on the wall. Heath Ledger.
Bearing in mind, Adam is referring to a wall in my house that none of you can see.
I shit myself. What? Michael Keaton's dead.
I would.
Heisenberg's
dead. I'd like to have brought him back just to see what Nolan would have done with that third film had the Joker been a viable option.
Which it would have been, because they didn't kill him off on purpose. He would have brought him back, of course.
So that's what I'd just love to see where he would have gone with him.
Sure. For me, it's Philip Seymour Hoffman. The guy died at the top of his game.
Yeah.
He was growing into... He was always great, but he was growing into himself and becoming a better and better actor and being cast in better and better parts. And he was one of those, I think, some people sort of burn out and fade away. You know, they hit their peak in their 20s or 30s and they don't do anything after that. He was one of those who just had a demeanour and the gravitas that you knew he was going to be better the older he got. I could have imagined him being 70 and delivering the best performance of his career. Some, you know, like Peter Cushing or, you know, Alec Guinness. Or, you know, one of these, Michael Caine. That's the sort of guy I saw him as, and it's a shame that he was cut down in his prime.
Well, I've spoken before about him to you both and how I didn't really get him.
Mm.
And it was only really, you know, Capote, Doubt, and A Most Wanted Man, which really kind of made me respect him as an actor as much as I do now.
Yeah, phenomenal.
I'm going to say John Candy, because every time he comes on the screen, I absolutely love him.
Uncle Buck too.
bring it back.
Because of what he gave us in such a small amount, but I left Brandon Lee. Because in The Crow, I thought he was superb. And we'll never get to see anything else but that. And I just had so much... you're kind of rooting for
record,
him.
Man.
It's perfect. And I always think to myself, what would he have gone on? I think it'd have been a massive film star.
He would have, because he has the rare it factor. Very few people can mesh sort of charm and ability, skill, acting. But, you know, and you just...
He is like me.
Have a word with you.
He will be seen.
Did you hear the laugh? Nice.
But he was one of those that he was magnetic, and it's rare. Yeah. That star quality, that X factor, very few people have that. You know, your Clooney's and your Cruises and your DiCaprio's are a rare breed. And he had that sort of magnetism, and then he died.
Your Wazoo.
Of course, Tommy, yeah.
Yeah, that's it. But keep your questions coming.
Please do.
Go to skiptheend.co.uk and all our links are on there. Now, it's Tweet of the Week time.
Oh, I like Tweet of the Week.
Tweet of the Week, Tweet of the Week. We need a little...
Yeah, a little tune. Leave that with me.
Tweet of the Week, Tweet of the Week.
Sorry, you're doing your impression of a minstrel.
Well, what I'll do there is I'll copy and paste that and we'll just use that. Ben Mullings has put, when you hear that Skip the End of rewatching Empire Strikes Back, he then uploaded a little GIF file of Michael Scott from The Office when he's getting everyone together.
Oh, yeah. It's happening.
Yeah. Brilliant.
That's Tweet of the Year.
Yeah, Tweet of the Year. Anyone who uses an Office reference, be it British or American, you're
in. So we'll never have that feature again. Well done, Ben.
And I also like to point out that Mark pronounced it GIF, which apparently is the correct pronunciation. No, the creator of the GIF file, he's one of the few people who said, no, it is GIF. But everyone says GIF. But the creator of it says it's GIF. So Mark is absolutely right. I would have said GIF.
So Mark's actually pronounced something correct.
Mark has pronounced something more correct than anyone else would have. So...
God, I think I fucked up as well. And finally, we had a poster competition.
Oh, God.
The very final competition. And Ben was very adamant on the fact that this is the last one ever.
Boring, isn't it?
So, it was toss posters.
We might bring it back.
Nope.
No.
Episode 100.
Definitely not.
We all had to choose our worst posters of all time.
No, it was second worst, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, because we've run this twice.
Because we keep labouring the same shit over and over again.
I had X-Men First Class,
Ben,
which was...
Shh. They're going to notice that
I mean, we keep coming up with new and original features every week.
I had X-Men First Class, which was absolutely dog shit.
Yeah.
Ben had Peoples, which was absolutely dog shit.
Film no one's ever seen. It looks like Craig Robinson is slowly working a spoon into his anus.
Yep. And we had Adam's Heavy Petting. It's actually Heavy Petting, not Adam's Heavy Petting. That'd be good. I'll pay to see that.
He's like Tyler Perry. It's like Adam's Heavy Petting.
And the winner is... Let's have a little bit of like... And the winner is... Drum roll.
Drum roll, please.
Heavy Petting.
Oh, yeah.
It's the dog tongue, I think. Did
the
it.
Dog tongue. The great really awful CGI.
Finally, I've managed to break Mark's streak.
That's true, yeah.
Well done.
You've managed... Yeah, because Mark cheats and uses his own hashtags to...
I should have picked Star Wars or something. Yeah. It's the worst. But massive.
Again, you did that with Phantom Menace.
But, you know, not all me. Well done, creators of Heavy Petting.
That's true, yeah.
For such a god-awful poster.
Big time. And that brings us to the end of yet another Skip to the End podcast.
It's been fun.
It's been a great one, because we got to talk about Star Wars. It's always a great one.
You wait until the episode where... Episode 7, man.
Holy moly. And do you know what? We're a month away.
We are, yeah.
Do you not remember when it was like... A year away, 10 months away, 6 months away. We're a month away now.
Incredible.
Good.
The hype almighty. Train is full on.
And it's going to shit all over us. What have we got on the next episode?
Exactly. We've got a couple of episodes to concern ourselves with before that. So on the next episode, we're going to review the new Steven Spielberg film, hopefully a triumphant reunion with Tom Hanks, who's had many great successes before, Bridge of Spies.
That looks bloody good.
Looks phenomenal. Looks like a great work. We're going
to
watch that.
Quite a serious one for us to review as well.
Yeah, big time, yeah. But we were very serious with our job review. I was quite proud of us. We could have made terrible puns like we normally do, but we didn't. It was a serious review. We're basically the new Mark Commode. Fact.
All three of us.
Yeah.
As well as that, we're going to be skipping back in time to what year, Mark?
1996.
Tremendous. And also, whose pick was the rewatch? It was me.
It was.
We're going to be watching Beetlejuice, which I am... looking forward to immensely.
I've chose nothing for next.
You've done. I'm not even going to talk to you then.
I've not done any work.
Sit in the corner.
You're going
to have to do
game.
Some work though, because next week you're coming up with the 26 questions for Blockbuster Videos. So enjoy that.
I'm looking forward to it already.
Lovely stuff. And we're also going to be doing a topic. What's our next topic, Mark?
Top three movie characters of all time.
Which is ridiculous.
It's so hard.
It's too hard.
That's what she said.
But not, anyway. Not to you. Christ. Yeah. And on that bombshell, let's end it.
Oh, hang on, let's just plug a little bit more. I just want to plug a little bit more as well. We're going to announce the winner of an Apple Watch.
Jesus,
you know,
H. Christ.
I'm sorry, but that's huge.
Apple Watch, market value of about what? 300 quid?
That's a lot of bunts.
What was the question?
Steve Jobs' date of birth.
Yeah, exactly.
When is it?
And if you want to tell us, go to skiptotheend.co.uk. You'll have all of the links to our Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, Semaphore, Smoke Signal.
We no excuse.
We do all of it.
Dial a pigeon.
Exactly. We'll take it in any way it comes.
No excuse.
That's what she said.